Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Van Helsing, R.I.P. by Theophilus Monroe and Michael Anderley, narrated by Rebecca Mitchell. Chapter 1. I followed Dracula through the broken doors of the abandoned building that had once housed the Hospital for the Insane of Louisiana in Rapides Parish. Many of the buildings on the grounds were still in operation, but this one hadn't been touched in decades. Dylan and two other unshifted wolves from his pack followed us inside. "All right, Venkman, where are the ghosts?" Dracula turned back to me with narrowed eyes. That old fart of a vampire really did the death stare well.
"This isn't a joke. When the ghost of Abraham Van Helsing comes back, you'll thank me for this."
I raised an eyebrow. How is hunting a few ghosts in an abandoned asylum going to help us stop someone like Van Helsing?
"Do you really think we stand a better chance against him with no experience dealing with ghosts?"
I snorted. "I wouldn't say I have no experience. I've met a few." Dracula shook his head.
"Those weren't troubled or vengeful spirits. This place is full of them."
"How do you even know that?"
"I searched the interwebs. This place is definitely haunted."
Dylan chuckled. "The interwebs, huh?" I cleared my throat. "You realize paranormal groups come into places like this all the time. They rarely find much."
"I know a few tricks. I'll coax the spirits out."
"You'll coax them out?"
"Spirits require energy to manifest. Watch your phones. They'll try to drain your batteries. Pay attention to cold spots. Heat is another form of energy they'll use."
I rolled my eyes. "The whole place is drafty. I'm not putting a lot of stock in cold spots. And my phone is old. Battery drain is par for the course."
"All I need is a sign that a ghost is attempting to manifest. Then, I'll give it a little extra juice."
"You're talking about magic?"
"Straight from the Scholomance. I've got it in spades. So does Abraham Van Helsing. If he comes after us, he'll have all the energy he needs to do whatever he wants."
The building was dusty. No one had cleared the place of cobwebs in years, and the chandelier over the foyer was covered. As we walked through the property, the floors creaked with every step. I wasn't sure the place was entirely safe, but unless we fell through the floor and happened to impale ourselves through the heart on a broken floorboard on the way down, we weren't in any real danger. I coughed in my hand. The dust in the air was almost as thick as the layer that covered everything in the place. Dracula pulled a small device from his pocket and turned it on. He moved it through the air in front of him. Dylan leaned in to peer at it.
"What is that?"
"I think it's an EMF detector. Dracula's probably seen too many episodes of Ghost Hunters." We followed Dracula through the rooms, most of which were old patient rooms with numbers over the doors and small metal bed frames. I traced my hand over a dust-covered wall behind one of the bed frames. The initials BW were carved into the plaster. Dracula's EMF detector beeped and flashed a red light.
"Something's here."
In a snap, the temperature of the air dropped at least 10 degrees. I stepped back toward the door. When I did, the bed frame slid across the floor and crashed into the opposite wall. Dracula extended his hand and released a white light, energy from the Scholomance, into the room. The bed flew at me, and I raised my hands to force it back to the floor. Without my vampiric strength, it would have knocked me over. A dark, human-shaped figure appeared in the room. It turned toward me and ran straight through me, knocking the wind out of my lungs. Dracula stepped aside and laughed.
"What the hell, dude?"
Dylan and the others took off down the hall like scared puppies, and I stepped out into the hall. The energy Dracula released had fueled more than the bed-throwing, body-chilling spirit that had struck me. Dozens of specters jetted down the hall. Their ear-piercing shrieks sounded from every direction. I did my best to dodge the ghosts as they flew at me. I didn't want another one to move through me. That chill was like someone had staked me with an icicle. It didn't do any harm, but it was uncomfortable as hell. Sort of like getting patted down by TSA agents at an airport, and almost as creepy. Dracula reached into his cloak and grabbed a short rod. Usually, if a guy opens a cloak and pulls out a rod, I'm covering my eyes and running away. As Dracula swung the rod in his hand, okay, get that visual out of your head. The spirits dissipated on contact. He was moving down the hall casually, like a stroll through the cereal aisle at the grocery store. He wasn't the least bit terrified. If anything, he was curious about the variety of spirits presenting themselves as we moved through the building. Dracula reached into his cloak again and handed me a small cylindrical canister of salt.
"Pour a line down the middle of the hall."
"Why? What is this going to do?" He looked at me with a straight face.
"We're assaulting some ghosts."
I groaned. "This really works?"
"Salt is to ghosts, as citronella is to mosquitoes. They hate the stuff, won't cross the barrier. The salt neutralizes the energy they need to manifest. Iron does the same thing. The ghosts I dispatched already will rematerialize somewhere further down the hall, and the salt will contain them in the back of the house."
I poured a narrow line of salt across the hall. A few spirits behind the line were still swirling around, but they weren't charging at us anymore. I pulled out my phone to take a picture. No one would believe it, and they'd think I faked it. Still, if you see a ghost, if you can't capture it with one of those Ghostbuster traps, the next best thing is with a photo. My phone was dead. Damn it! Think the ghosts drained it? Dracula's eyes darted back and forth.
"We came prepared. Assault and battery."
I stared hard at Dracula for a few seconds. "Your joke doesn't work. Ghosts like batteries. They don't like salt."
"Mice like cheese, but they don't like traps. The same principle applies. We lure them out with energy they can use. Then we trap them with salt while we figure out what we're dealing with."
"They're ghosts, Drac. Not much to figure out." Dracula shook his head.
"This is why we're doing this. These are ghosts who don't have a grudge against us at all. They're a bit wily. I suppose it makes sense. These spirits reside in an old asylum. They aren't necessarily out for blood."
"Speaking of going out for blood, I could use a pint of B-positive right now." Dracula nodded.
"Getting struck by a spirit can take a lot out of you. It makes sense you'd be hungry. We have plenty of blood back at headquarters."
The chandelier over my head in the entryway shook. Dracula shouted, "Get out of the way!" as the plaster in the ceiling cracked. I jumped away just before the chandelier crashed to the floor. "I thought you said these ghosts were harmless. They didn't have a vendetta against us." Dracula nodded.
"Lesson learned. If these spirits are dangerous, imagine encountering one with all of Abraham Van Helsing's skill and magic who wants you dead."
I shook my head. "We don't know that he'll come after us. Yeah, I beheaded one of his sons, but come on. The guy had it coming. He'd already lived well beyond his years. Plus, we found his youngest son and brought him back to him so he could be saved. Abraham should be grateful."
"I wouldn't count on it. Abraham Van Helsing's ghost tolerated us at the Skolomance because he had no choice. We were pursuing the path of light. That man wanted nothing more in life than to eliminate me.
You weren't the one who killed his son. You took Samuel back to him at the Scholomance. I spent some time talking to him while you were pursuing the path of light. He wasn't a bad guy. A bit lonely, but now he has Samuel. The door to the building blew open and created a vacuum that blew my salt line away. Well, ain't that the balls? Dracula tilted his head.
The what? Never mind. We should get out of here. These ghosts might not have a personal vendetta against us, if they're ghosts at all. But I'm beginning to suspect we aren't exactly welcome.
We're investigating ghosts at an abandoned insane asylum, and you expected they'd welcome us with a calm and rational response?
Dracula grinned. At least you know a little more about what we might be facing. And we have a great place to train.
Chapter 2. The worst thing about us using an old school building for a base was that it had classrooms. That and rodents. One giant black rat in particular was especially creepy. He poked his head out from time to time, but he was clever. He always found a way back into the walls before we could catch him. The building was a den for werewolves before Dracula and I showed up. Dylan's pack was small. Between our fight with the Weird Sisters and the Van Helsings, not to mention the other rogue hunters who'd swarmed New Orleans in recent weeks, Dylan's pack was down to 3, including himself. All males. This den was a sausage fest, each man's ego more fragile than the last. Dracula paced across the front of the room, and I tapped my fingernails on my fangs as I listened to him drone on about what he was still convinced would be our next supernatural threat, the vengeful spirit of Abraham Van Helsing. It had been nearly 3 months since I'd killed one of his sons, James. He'd been alive a lot longer than any human should due to the immortality elixir the Van Helsing brothers had developed. I spared Abraham's youngest son, Samuel, who'd been posing as a candidate for office. He deserved to die more than any of them. But when I took an ethereal vacation through hell and to the Scholomance, where I met the ghost of Abraham Van Helsing, I'd promised him I'd bring his son back to him so he might be redeemed from the path of darkness. Samuel Van Helsing, later known as the Carver, his serial killer name, and later still as the politician Dean Carver, was abducted by vampires as a child. They turned him and raised him as one of their own, and Abraham Van Helsing had lived the rest of his life believing Samuel was dead. In the void where Abraham Van Helsing's ghost resided, a version of the Scholomance mystically connected to the actual Scholomance in Romania, time passed differently. Here it had been a few months, but Van Helsing might have had years to stew over all he'd learned once we sent Samuel back to him. Would he be grateful we gave him a chance to know his youngest, or would he be pissed I'd killed another of his boys? The fact that I was a vampire, not to mention teamed up with Abraham's lifelong nemesis, probably didn't help. Dracula pointed with a stylus to 4 different kinds of haunts, ways that ghosts might manifest on his chalkboard. Residual, intelligent, poltergeist, and inhuman.
Who can tell me which of these 3 best explains our experiences last night?
I snorted. Do I seriously need to raise my hand?
You're already speaking.
Right. Well, I think that's too simplistic. Of those 4, only one of them is actually a ghost. Residual haunts look like spirits, but it's more like a psychic energy and intense memory recorded in the ether that plays itself over and over again. A woman walking up and down the stairs. A person reliving their death over and over.
How do we know they aren't spirits trapped doing those things over and over again?
We don't know anything for sure. I've had my encounters with human spirits. They might be attached, connected to something, but I don't know that I've ever met one who is really trapped like that.
What about poltergeists? Dylan asked.
There were quite a few bangs and odd noises, things moving about. I shook my head. Again, not spirits. Not exactly. Poltergeists are created by living spirits, a manifestation of some kind of troubled psychological energy.
Dracula nodded. It's true. They are not former human spirits, but the offspring of living men and women. That doesn't mean they're not intelligent or dangerous.
I sighed. If we were dealing with poltergeists, they'd been there a while. We were in an old asylum. Troubled psychological energy goes with the territory. But a lot of people also died in the asylum.
Dracula nodded. It is quite possible that we were dealing with both. A troubled mind meeting an untimely death might produce a poltergeist as he dies. The poltergeist can terrorize the human spirit indefinitely should the ghost refuse to go with the Reapers.
I shrugged. Does it matter? Intelligent spirits and poltergeists respond to the same weapons, iron and salt.
Dracula cleared his throat. Correction. Their energies can be temporarily disoriented by salt and iron. To properly place a human spirit at rest, whatever ties them to this world must be destroyed. When it is, their names will appear again to the Reapers, and they'll arrive to harvest the soul.
How do you kill a poltergeist? Dylan asked.
Dracula grimaced. That's more complicated. The first step is usually to identify the human responsible for the poltergeist's existence. It's not strictly necessary, but it's difficult to discern the second step otherwise. The second step requires pacifying the particular angst that fueled it when it was born. A task much simpler if the poltergeist's maker still lives.
I raised my hand. So, if the person who made the poltergeist created it out of rage, you have to calm them down?
Not exactly. If someone births the poltergeist out of rage, they must make peace with the source of their anger. If they do, the poltergeist's energy will fade and die. If birthed out of fear, they must overcome their fear.
And if the person who made the poltergeist is already dead?
If the spirit remains on the earthly plane, the same principle applies. If one can contact the spirit, it's possible to help the spirit overcome their angst.
And if the spirit has already moved on?
Then there is no way to pacify the spirit's angst. Even if the spirit is at peace in the beyond, the poltergeist will continue to act out the spirit's original angst, unless the spirit is brought back to the earthly plane.
That's possible. Zoe and I did that with Roy when we brought him out of Hades and put his spirit into the body of a golem. Now he's the boatman of the River Styx. They say destiny is a cruel mistress. I say she has a sense of humor. The vampire moved on.
The other method to eliminate a poltergeist is to create one yourself. A poltergeist can kill another poltergeist.
That can't be easy. Aren't poltergeists usually created by accident? Dracula beamed, and I felt like a star pupil.
There's a spell, one I learned in the Scholomance. It's painful. One needn't be a master of the Scholomance to do it. One only need have a soul. Then these words must be spoken.
He wrote words in Greek letters on the chalkboard and an English transliteration beneath it. Egeira, Phenoma, Ancus.
Do not say it aloud. It means, arise, spirit of angst. If your angst is focused on the poltergeist, it will destroy the poltergeist you seek to kill. Once it is done, provided your angst was channeled solely against the poltergeist, the entity you birth will die with the poltergeist it kills.
I was impressed. Did you learn all this shit about ghosts and haunts in the Scholomance? He shrugged.
And from experience? When a vampire kills and drains a victim, many of those spirits die with angst. Sometimes poltergeists emerge. If the spirit does not go with the reapers, vengeful ghosts remain. I've handled my share of both sorts over the years.
What about inhuman haunts? Dylan pressed.
I don't think that's what we were facing at the asylum,
Dracula said. Probably not, I agreed. But in the spirit of learning, what can you tell us about those? Dracula sighed.
They're the most dangerous sort. They are beings who are native to the astral realm, but can also interact with the earthly plane. Demons are one sort, the most dangerous. There are also sprites, fairies, and even disembodied gods. There are methods to deal with such things, exorcisms and the like. Such methods are not always reliable.
There's also Zoe, I reminded him.
She can reap creatures like that.
Yes, of course. Let us hope if we ever encounter something like that, she'll be nearby and willing to help.
Well, thankfully, if your fear is correct, if Abraham Van Helsing comes back as a vengeful spirit, he's very much human.
And also a master of the Scholomance. There's no telling what sort of creatures he might summon as instruments of his rage, Dracula pointed out.
Can a ghost create a poltergeist? I asked.
It's possible, he allowed.
But Van Helsing is a master of the Path of Light. Surely he wouldn't call forth demons or anything nasty like that. Dracula shook his head.
The Path of Light isn't so different than the Path of Darkness. It's but a mirror image. The difference between paths is not so stark as the divide between good and evil. One can work through either path to do great good or great evil. Even then, it's not always clear what's right or wrong. Justice is often exacted alongside vengeance. When kings and governments kill, we call it justice. When individuals do so, we call it murder. But what if the king's or judge's motives are less pure than the individual who takes a life of his own accord? Tyrants throughout history have committed many atrocities and genocides. Who would fault an individual who took it upon himself to execute such a tyrant?
Heroes and villains only exist in the comics, I pointed out. Dracula pointed at himself and grinned.
You're looking at history's perennial villain. We make villains of those we fear, and heroes of those whose valor supports our interests.
I nodded. Even vampires can be heroes. Dracula bowed his head.
And virtuous men, heroes of old, like Van Helsing, can easily be villains. It's choice, not nature, that makes us one or the other.
Chapter 3. I'd hoped that the trip to the asylum was a one-off, a chance to familiarize ourselves with what ghosts could do and how we might stop them in case we ended up facing off with Abraham Van Helsing. I still wasn't convinced he'd attack. Yeah, we'd killed James Van Helsing, the Van Helsing brother most responsible for his siblings' experience wielding magic of various sorts. In truth, Father Abraham's many sons had become more like the monsters he used to hunt than human. People assume that it's the desire to drink blood that makes vampires monsters. For some of us, that's true.
For many vampires, it's immortality that makes them something other than human. After centuries of death, losing everyone that tied them to their earthly lives, and seeing all the evil committed at the hands of humans, immortality drives a wedge between oneself and one's humanity. Dean Carver, aka Samuel Van Helsing, told us as much. They'd aligned with the Weird Sisters to overthrow the world's governments not because the Van Helsings were suddenly cozy with vampires, but because they shared a perspective on the world that saw more injustice and more bloodshed committed by humans and their governments than all the so-called monsters combined. Alexander and Reginald Van Helsing were still out there. We hadn't encountered them in months. Still, given that they were a flesh-and-blood threat with more than enough reason to hold a grudge against us, Dracula's disproportionate preoccupation with dead Van Helsings was bothersome. Technically, Samuel wasn't dead. We delivered him to the Scholomance in the void to his dead father while he was still breathing. I was more worried that he might come back and, as a vampire, use the sire bond that he'd used to turn the President of the United States to relaunch his original plan. We had taken Samuel to Abraham in the Scholomance precisely because Abraham believed he could help his son and lead him down a nobler path. That Dracula turned from his villainous ways meant that it was possible that Samuel could be reformed. Was it likely? Who was I to say? Dracula's history with Abraham Van Helsing explained much of his fear. Dracula was concerned that, rather than Abraham turning Samuel to the light, Samuel might tempt Abraham dark, presumably by revealing that I'd beheaded James. Now that some months had passed, I was beginning to think that we should have been upfront with Abraham about what had happened. We could have explained the situation. Anything Abraham might have learned about the incident since then would have come from Samuel. Given Dracula's experience dealing with Van Helsing's, I couldn't dismiss his concerns out of hand. He'd evaded Abraham's attempts to kill him for years, largely on account of his clever booby traps. Alexander and Reginald couldn't show up at the schoolhouse without us knowing it. Their immortality elixir ensured that none of the traps would kill them on the spot, but the darts activated by pressure plates under the floor, tripwires that triggered blowtorches, and intense electrical current running through the windowsills would at least slow them down and give us a chance to apprehend, if not kill them, before they got inside. How do you kill an immortal Van Helsing? Beheading alone wasn't enough unless we separated the head from the body. To make it permanent, we could smash their heads. None of those traps would prevent a ghost from infiltrating the property. To do that, Dracula had us mix salt with paint and spread it on the exterior walls. The problem was that ghosts could pass through matter. They weren't bound by the laws of physics. A clever spirit, like Abraham Van Helsing, could still float in from the ceiling or through the floors by passing through the ground below. All he'd need was a single crack, and his entire ghastly form could rematerialize inside the building. It was a lot like trying to mouse-proof a house. No matter how many gaps you think you close, they always find a way in. At least with salt covering the walls and as much of the ceilings and floors as we could manage, the ghosts would have limited options for entry or exit. While Dylan, along with his fellow werewolves Logan and Ian, were painting the place, Dracula had me working the computer. My task was to identify any patients who'd died at the old mental hospital. Dracula wanted to go back. He wanted a plan to put those spirits to rest. Considering that we could have been dealing with both intelligent ghosts and poltergeists, it was a tall order. To complicate things, we were also a night away from a full moon, which meant Dylan and the wolves would have to leave for a couple of nights. They were tame wolves, relatively speaking, and they wouldn't kill anyone. Contrary to popular belief, most werewolves weren't harmed.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?